Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, what we do in this podcast only echoes throughout your earbuds. It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Because patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's never met a piece of wheat he hasn't wanted to run his hands over. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wheat. Yes.
Yes, you heard me. Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. How are you, Mr. Ormsby? Couple big movies this week.
Woo, we have a big show for our audience today. I'm really excited to talk about it. I have a lot to say about both of these movies.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat about them. We won't dilly-dally too much before getting there. Just to let you know, we'll do the usual. Got both the movies Gladiator 2 and Wicked to review. We'll also do a best ever challenge, best swords and sandals movies. So, you know, that's a genre people don't talk about a lot, but we're going to talk about it a little bit. And of course, we'll kick it off with some buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want people to know about, Andrew?
This can be interesting because I don't know if I fully recommend my buried treasure or not. I'm going to go with a new Netflix original show called Kaos. K-A-O-S.
Okay.
It stars Jeff Goldblum, Janet McTeer, Stephen DeLane, and David Thewlis.
Okay.
The basic premise of this show is it takes place in Greek mythology. If Greek mythology was in a modern day contemporary world. Like imagine Olympus to be Beverly Hills and Crete and Troy and all these, they're like the valley of LA.
Okay.
So you have people like Jeff Goldblum who plays Zeus. You have all these gods and it's about the end of days for the gods possibly. It's interesting. It's a very high concept show. I'm enjoying it so far. I don't know where it's going to go, though. I think this is a mini series, so it may just be a one and done season.
Okay. But I haven't heard anything about this, which doesn't surprise me because often Netflix will drop things I have never heard about. Movies, TV shows. It's kind of their business model, honestly. And
Netflix, you're greenlit.
Yeah. Well, and it's also just Netflix, you're not marketed. Like, you know, like they don't do a ton of marketing for stuff, at least where we live. There's probably billboards and, you know, subway ads and that kind of stuff in bigger cities for some Netflix stuff. But like it's... Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like I get the same level of exposure to their stuff. And it just seems like every week or two, there's a movie that pops up on like Letterboxd Most Popular. And I'm going, well, I haven't even heard, what is this movie? I've never even heard of this movie. And it's always on Netflix. Always. And I think I'm just coming to terms with the fact that for some people, like when I was growing up, you say, oh, I watch TV. That meant you were going to watch one of the four major networks or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
When people say I'm going to watch some TV, they mean I'm going to turn on Netflix. I think Netflix is television for a lot of people or is content for a lot of people. And that's not to say they don't have other streaming services, but I just think for whatever reason, Netflix has captured that environment in a way. And, you know, I don't know if it'll last forever, but right now it just kind of seems like they have just a stranglehold on just being able to drop stuff, and then it's in the, you know, the conversation. It's weird.
It really is. And it, I think shows like this really highlight the fact that Netflix, not that they'll greenlight anything, but they're not afraid to greenlight projects that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at a lot of, I guess you would call them contemporary stations, like NBC or CBS. A lot of the shows that those channels run aren't like this. You know, they're very, you know, medical drama, mm-hmm. or family comedy, stuff like that. You know, the safe go-tos. Netflix isn't interested in safe go-tos. If they were, we wouldn't have gotten Stranger Things or sure. many of the other plethora. That's the thing. That's another thing about Netflix. Yeah, they throw a lot of stuff at the wall, but some of it sticks,
mm-hmm.
and some of it's really good.
Yeah.
I haven't finished this show yet. I have 3 episodes left, but I do plan on finishing it, so I can say that that's a pro for me, that it's well, there kept you go. Me engaged.
At least you want to watch the rest of it.
Yep. What you got, Aaron?
I am going to talk about something that dropped on streaming, but it dropped on HBO Max. It's a movie that's been out for a while now called Caddo Lake. And I don't know if you saw this one. This is Eliza Scanlon and Dylan O'Brien, who, by the way, is having a good year. Dylan's in a lot of stuff this year. Lauren Ambrose is in it as well. This is a movie that when I saw some of the, you know, heard some of the things about it, it sounded like it was a horror movie. This is not a, this movie has scary elements to it, but this is like M. Night Shyamalan kind of, like, you know, twisty sci-fi. Like, this reminds me of some of the best sci-fi concept movies kind of thing. And I had a really good time with Caddo Lake. It's a nice, simple enough sci-fi premise that you're not really confused about the premise. So that allows you to start to try to suss out what's happening in a clear way. And yet the movie continues to surprise all the way throughout. So it also doesn't do that sci-fi thing where it's like, now we're going to explain all the why this happens this way. And, you know, and it's deeply steeped in mythology. And it's like, no, this is just like, this sci-fi thing happens. That's all you need to know. Ready, set, go. And like, I don't know. I really kind of dug that because it let me focus on the characters and kind of some of the deeper things it was saying about generational trauma and things like that. So yeah, I really liked Caddo Lake, and I would recommend you check it out if you haven't already. Again, it has been out for a little bit on Max. Have you heard of this?
Have not heard of this, but Dylan O'Brien is having a good year, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. He Dan Aykroyd is having a good year. Yeah, so check that out. That's Caddo Lake on Max and Chaos, a new series on Netflix for the buried treasure.
All right. Is this like an awards contention movie, or is it just a fun movie to catch?
No, I'm doing both awards catch up as well as 2024 catch up. So this one is in the latter category.
Gotcha.
Just trying to make sure I see as much as possible. That is the buried treasure for this week. Let's get into the big dig. Let's talk about Gladiator 2.
I remember that day. I never forgot it. That a slave could take revenge against an emperor.
Where were you born?
I don't know. I never knew a mother nor a father.
You will be my instrument.
Who are you?
Did you hear that crowd?
The greatest temple Rome ever built.
The Colosseum. Because this is what they believe in. Power.
Years after witnessing the death of the revered hero Maximus at the hands of his uncle, Lucius is forced to enter the Colosseum after his home is conquered by the tyrannical emperors, who now lead Rome with an iron fist. With rage in his heart and the future of the empire at stake, Lucius must look to his past to find strength and honor to return the glory of Rome to its people. Gladiator 2 is a sequel to the Oscar movie, Gladiator. We'll see if it bears any Oscar love itself. Paul Mescal playing Lucius, Pedro Pascal, Pascal, you know, whatever. I'm sure I mispronounced one of them. Playing Marcus Acacius, Denzel Washington playing Macrinus. And then Connie Nielsen is Lucilla. Joseph Quinn as one of the two Emperor brothers. Derek Jacobi back in the movie as well. Andrew, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
It's okay.
It's okay for
what about
Andrew.
You?
I loved it.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, fun. I love these conversations. Because I'm on the low side of okay.
Wow, just teetering into didn't like it.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right.
I think here's my problem. Even though you should start first, I want to clarify something.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
It's not that I don't like this movie. It's just that as I was watching this movie, I continuously found myself comparing it to the original, and in every way, shape, and form, it fell short for me.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I don't think that's the way to watch this movie. I think you're right. I think I can't imagine like thinking that this movie was going to be as good as the first one. Just because it's one of the, known as one of the greater movies of all time. I will say, however, that even though it's not as good as the first one, it takes everything I loved about the first one and brings it back. Which is that it is not necessarily a movie about the gladiatorial pursuits. Like, it's not like you have the gladiator stuff in both Gladiator and Gladiator 2. Mm-hmm. And that is part of the spectacle of it. And certainly part of the reason that some people enjoy it. Not me. I enjoy it because the movie is more concerned, it seems to me, about why people are picking up swords than what they're doing with the swords after they pick them up. And that, to me, is more interesting, ultimately. The motivations, the history, the drama, the who's the good guy, who's the enemy, who's the bad guy, kind of idea. And I think this movie plays with those themes as well as the first one does. And I think a big part of that is the Denzel Washington character exists in this interesting, nebulous place. The Pedro Pascal character has this really nuanced thing going on with their character. And it just feels like there's a real understanding in this movie about hope and dreams and about what it means not to let go of your ideals, to not give in to cynicism or pessimism or those kind of things. And of course, that's going to ring really loud and true to me. Like, that's going to speak to me in a pretty meaningful way as somebody who fights for my optimism and my ideals and tries not to let the negativity of the world drown those out. I think the movie does all those things well enough that when it's doing the action stuff, that I'm interested in that, but I'm never disinterested in the movie. So when it's doing both things, I'm fully engaged and fully interested. I had a really good time. I think Denzel doesn't do bad performances. I would hesitate to think of a Denzel Washington performance that I haven't enjoyed, but mm-hmm. I think this is one of his best. I think he's incredible in this movie. I had somebody tell me they were worried that it was just like his Training Day character all over again. And I told them, I was like, no,
it is not.
there is a really interesting, softening to this character that goes really, carefully with how razor sharp this character is too. So like there's an interesting dichotomy within the character itself that I found really interesting to explore. So anyhow, those are some of the reasons that I had a great time with Gladiator and ended up loving it. I almost went with High Side, I liked it, but decided that I had a good enough time to go with Loved It. So what are some of your general thoughts?
Pedro Pascal is great in this. I found him to be the most defined and layered character in the entire film. The way you see his character struggle with the orders he's given that contradict with the oath he's taken, it's a really interesting way to have a character build this kind of legacy around them. And then you put them in this situation where their morals are tested and questioned, and to see what that type of person will do in that situation. I thought that that was the most interesting part of this movie. I will agree, though, that Denzel is so good in this. I just wish that I would have liked to have seen more on-screen development of the character. I could tell that he personally knew a great deal about the character because he felt so genuine. That's something that I learned from my acting classes is, and I'm sure all acting classes are the same, they teach you whenever you're developing a character to fully define everything about them, like starting from birth and then going, like, live the life of that character up until the point that you get to that, to the film. And I could really tell that Denzel had really done the research, done all the homework, and fully immersed himself in this world and brought this character to life. I think he's just so good. I couldn't agree more with you on there.
Yeah.
I do have cons, obviously, because it's not my favorite film.
Yeah, it was low side of okay. Yeah, what are some of the things that you didn't like about it?
Some movies don't need sequels. Gladiator was one of them for me.
We're gonna have this conversation, huh?
We are gonna. Okay. What made the original so good is that it took a simple plot. And it's just the original Gladiator is just all about revenge, really. And made the characters surrounding it more.
I don't know
complex.
If it's all about revenge, but continue.
The plot is all about, for me, the plot is all about revenge and Gladiator, but the characters around it are way more complex and they have more going on than the story lends them.
Yeah.
Here, though, I think that this is a simple, this is a film filled with simple characters that surrounds them in a complex plot. There are a lot of deaths in this. Spoilers. Ridley Scott film about gladiators has a lot of deaths in it.
Spoiler alert.
Yes. But because there are so many characters that are what I would, not one-dimensional, but underdeveloped characters, whenever they did die, it felt anticlimactic for me. Like, there are a lot of big-name deaths in this. Obviously, we're not going to say who. But when they happened, I was like, oh, okay. Just because I wasn't invested enough in these characters to fully appreciate, you know, their stories. There are some segments of this film that serve little purpose other than spectacle, and that's my biggest con for this movie. There's a segment that deals with a water battle that I hated, absolutely hated that segment of the movie. It completely took me out of the immersion. It's as if somebody whispered in Ridley Scott's ear saying, "Bigger is better." But that isn't always the case whenever it takes the audience out of the experience.
It didn't take me out of the experience, but again, that's not necessarily what I've taken from these movies. Do you think it's substantially different than like the tigers in the first one or like what makes it different to you than the other gladiatorial battles that are just, hey, look, the gladiators are doing gladiator things?
Practicality, if that makes sense.
I don't know what do you mean by that?
Okay, so there's cut this out if it's too spoilerish. There's a segment
in the
movie
where you're talking about the water.
They
actually did that in the Colosseum
with sharks and stuff.
I don't know about shark. I mean, they actually did like water gladiatorial stuff in the Colosseum. They'd fill it with water and do that stuff. I mean, he took that from history, is all I'm saying. I don't know. You know, I'm sure he embellished on it. Hollywooded it a little bit, but. I think that's the case with, you know, all the stuff, whether it
be maybe I'm just not as up on my Roman history, but it just seemed a little out there compared to the first movie. And a lot of the, I think you mentioned something like it brings back some memorable moments from the first, like it pays homage to original moments from the first film. They didn't hit home, or they didn't hit for me like, oh, I remember that. It was... don't know, just maybe I was in the wrong headspace for this movie.
I don't know. Listen, we all have our own experiences, and I certainly have had experiences where I will go into a movie and very quickly just be like, why does this movie even exist? What is, you know, what is this? And then I kind of, you know, see things differently. And I'm not saying that's what you're going through, but, yeah. But that is legitimate. I think, again, we've said this on the show before. I think we underestimate how much our status while watching something impacts, whether or not we enjoy watching it. I think we all like to think we are, fair enough to look through our own biases and everything like that and everything that's going on in our day, and we can rationally dissect a piece of art. And the truth of the matter is, I may have just been having a good day and I was like, this is a fun movie, you know, like so like you just never know with that kind of stuff. And that's actually genuinely why I find these kinds of conversations fun, is because the more you start to experience a movie through other people's eyes, I think the more you get to the truth of what works and what doesn't work for different kinds of people within a movie, because there is no single thing that works for everybody, you know? So it's just, it's fun to kind of figure out where that line is. And, you know, we can have the sequel conversation. What movies need sequels? What movies don't need sequels? It feels a lot like what makes a movie necessary conversation, which I've had with friends before. In fact, there's an episode of this podcast with one of my friends where the whole podcast is about, you know, does it matter if a movie is necessary or not?
That'd be a fun conversation.
It is a fun conversation because I think subconsciously it does. Because, again, of how we view things. So, for instance, I haven't seen the trailer because I don't watch trailers. I saw a still image of How to Train Your Dragon live action. I think that's dumb. There's no more pointless movie to me in the universe than doing How to Train Your Dragon live action. That movie was perfect. And a lot of what made it so great was its animation. To me, There's no moment in that movie where, like there is in Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast, where I go, oh, I'd like to see that quote unquote fixed or done better, or, you know, with a modern sensibility, or those kind of things. How to Train Your Dragon doesn't, I don't get it. I don't understand why that movie needs to be made. So can I give that movie a fair shot? I don't know that I can, because I'll just come out of it going, yeah, I liked that because it just retold the story that I loved from this other movie I love, you know, but maybe they're going to do something different. I don't know. So I say that to say the answer to the question, is it necessary, is a biased question because it depends on the person watching it. There's a person watching Gladiator 2 that maybe didn't even see the original Gladiator. Is the movie necessary for them? Does it hit them differently? Is there a person, you know, there's a person watching Gladiator 2 whose family got to eat because they got paid to work on the movie. So does that make the movie necessary? It does for that family. You know what I mean? Like there's the commerce of it all. There's the art of it all. There's the marketing of it all. And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't know that it's a valuable way to spend our energy defining what makes something good or bad by whether or not it's necessary or unnecessary, because that just seems like such a multifaceted and subjective kind of thing. And there are movies that are completely unnecessary that are, I'm so glad exist and I've seen multiple times, aka Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. Completely unnecessary, but it's incredible, right? Like, and again, I know you could argue it is necessary because it corrects some of the you know, the sins of the past movie. And I get that, but I think that logic can always be there in one way or another, whether it's Gladiator 2, How to Train Your Dragon live action, whatever it might be. Somebody can argue, here's why it's necessary. So I don't know. Is Gladiator 2 necessary? No. Is any movie necessary? Probably not. Am I glad Gladiator 2 exists? Yes. I had a really fun time watching it. Are you glad Gladiator 2 exists? Probably not.
Well, here's the thing. The first Gladiator, I just looked it up. The first Gladiator movie is my 26th favorite movie of all time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a high bar for any movie to look up.
That's going to be like me with How to Train Your Dragon. Like it's in my top 20, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else? I don't think Paul Mescal's that great in this movie.
Mm.
I found him wooden.
Do you find Russell Crowe wooden?
No.
I think he is so Russell Crowe-like in this movie. I really thought it worked.
I found Russell Crowe stoic. I never found...
That's what I found Paul Mescal in this movie. Just like very stoic, deeply brooding. There was a lot going on under the stoicism, in my opinion, from what I saw. Maybe I was just putting that there myself. I don't know.
No, I mean, we each see something in a performance that we attach ourselves to, or we try to find something in each performance to attach ourselves to.
I will say this so I'm clear. I genuinely thought it was a great performance. So I do want to say that. Which is funny because Pedro Pascal is great in this movie, but I would have put both Paul and Denzel above his performance. But I think all three of them are great.
Yeah. Connie Nielsen is just as good as she was in the first one.
Yep.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the Brother Emperors?
They were underdeveloped and is it
by the movie or just in life?
It's savage. Here's a question that is important for me to ask. Can we talk about who the true villain is in this movie?
I don't think so.
Or is that spoilerish?
I think that's pretty spoilerish.
Okay.
In my opinion, I really liked the way the movie revealed the heroes and villains.
I do. I agree with that. I really do agree with that. I found them to push the narrative forward, but I didn't find them to be fascinating characters.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's the intention of the movie, too. I don't think they're meant to drive plot. I think they are meant to be plot, if that makes sense. So
not that they were giving bad performances.
No.
I mean, they were fine.
And there is something always interesting about that vacuousness of wealth and just the complete lack of boundaries that comes with power that I do find fascinating. But yeah. Anything else? Anything else you want to talk about with Gladiator 2?
Soundtrack still slaps.
Mm.
It's so good.
It is good.
Every single time, I think it's called Now We Are Free is the name of the song. Mm. It doesn't matter where I am. It always gets me emotional every single time I hear it. It's just so good.
My one last thing about Gladiator 2 is it reminded me a lot of Rocky 2, and I'll let you do the processing on that and do the thinking about that, but I think there is a distinct difference between Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 that is echoed throughout the eternity of Gladiator and Gladiator 2 that I think is part of the equation that makes it work for me. So, yeah. So without spoiling by what I mean by that.
I'm going to marinate on that one.
That is Gladiator 2. It is in theaters. I'd recommend you go check it out. Andrew may say, wait for it.
It's a spectacle. I'll give you credit on that. If you want to go and see a spectacle, this is a good movie for a spectacle.
Well, speaking
of, I'm not going to say I didn't like it. I'm going to go with okay.
All right.
Okay.
It's just okay. Yeah. There you go.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Ritual is hardly the only brand running a Black Friday sale, and you've probably got tons of baby items on your list. But how about what your body needs? With a range of pregnancy-safe nutrient support, including natal choline and their best-selling prenatal multivitamin, Ritual is where you can use your savings to support you and your baby. Products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through their trademark traceable supply chain. So don't skip the essentials. Shop 40% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com.
All right, we will, speaking of spectacle, head into the best ever challenge and the spectacle of swords and sandals movies.
Yes.
Now, this is like any genre. You could gatekeep it however you wanted to. Genres are interesting to kind of put together, but it's kind of a feel sort of thing. These are, you know, sandy movies, movies that take place, you know, in that era of, you know, when Rome was in charge. So yeah, and movies that have swords and or sandals, although I'm sure you could find plenty of movies with swords and sandals that aren't technically swords and sandals movies, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what we got. Let's each nominate four, shall we?
Okay.
Why don't you kick us off, Andrew? What's your first nomination for best ever swords and sandals movie?
I already said it was my 26th best film of all time, the original Gladiator.
There you go. Gladiator. Good choice, good choice. I'll throw another obvious one in there. The 1959 Ben-Hur. I think
it's on my list of shame.
Oh, you should check it out, man.
You know what? That and Spartacus are both on my list of shame.
Oh, my goodness. Swords and Sandal Night at the Ormsby household. Let's go. Toga party.
Toga.
All right. All right. Well, yeah. Check out Ben-Hur, 1959. Heston is incredible in it. It is a fabulous movie. And it's very moving. Very moving movie. All right. What's your second nominee?
300.
Yeah, I had that one in my list of possibles as well.
It takes the idea of, you know, swords and sandals and combines it with the feel of that graphic novel perfectly, I think. I think that the art style, while being so unique, it's just such a good movie, too. A lot of people don't realize that 300 is a story being told. So if you look at it from that perspective, all the fantastical things that you see happening in it, it gives it more credence because it's a storyteller trying to rally the people around him to get them motivated. So, yeah, that's why whenever I see a 50-foot tall elephant or a goat playing a harp in this movie, I don't go, oh, you know, that takes me out of the immersion because it's a story being told.
Yeah, it's a story being told, and that helps with the visual audacity and the things that are going on. I think 300 is really good. I think it's become underrated over time because of some of the Snyder, whatever it is. What's it called when something that was something that was good and then there's something back?
Retrospective?
No, like when something's good and then everybody's like, well, it can't be that good. And then there's a bunch of people say it's not good.
I'm talking about the movie Crash.
I can't believe this stupid word. I can't think of her phrase with it's
you're got the turning it to me, Aaron, where you're,
it's got the word back in it. Everybody listening to the podcast right now is backlash. Thank you. Backlash. Thank you. I heard the cries of everybody in the podcast ether saying backlash.
Well, I was of no help, so I was
anyhow, 300 I think has become underrated after the Zack Snyder backlash. I just got stuck. I knew back was in it, but I kept thinking it was something back instead of starting with back. Anyways, a little look into the crumbling mind of an aging man. all right. I think it's my turn for a nominee. I'll go ahead and throw Spartacus in there since I know you're not going to do it. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am Spartacus.
I thought I was Spartacus.
Oh, see, you do know. You do know the movie. It's funny with a movie like that, how many times that has been parodied. You'd probably seen it in so many other movies.
We literally just saw it in Saturday Night. I am Satan.
Yes, we did. So Spartacus is great. This is one I came to late. I had to. I wasn't around when it came out. but yeah, it's really, really good. So check out Spartacus. All right, what's your next nominee?
I'm gonna go with a Tollywood film. Bahubali.
Ooh, I don't know anything about this.
Okay. It's technically two movies, but you watch them back to back pretty much. Okay. Because it just stops and then the next one picks up like immediately. Mm-hmm. Possibly top 100 films of all time, especially the second movie, Bahubali, the conclusion.
Okay.
Holy crap. You want to talk about spectacle? Something that Bollywood and Tollywood films do great is grandness. Like nothing is subtle. It's all just explosive and colorful and beautiful and vibrant. And that's what this movie is. The action is over the top in a good way. It's over the top in a good way. The story, the characters, you care so much about them. It's, if I could recommend Aaron to watch I guess it would be two movies. It would be these.
Okay. All right. Bahubali. All right.
Yes.
Nice.
They have sandals and swords. So
there you go. There you go. Well, I have no way to argue with you. I don't know anything about this movie. Let's see. I will go with another biblical epic. In fact, it is the biblical epic, you could say. Passion of the Christ, I think, fits into this category, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time. So there you go. Passion of the Christ. I'll nominate that one.
Okay. Do I go with a true... what's the other... Swords and Sandals has a term that's...
Is it backlash?
No. It's like Pleba or Peplum. I think they're called Peplum films.
Okay.
Are the actual like 1950s and 60s Greek and Italian films that were made, you know, with the Ray Harryhausen, like claymation special effects. Those are technically called Swords and Sandals
films. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So I'm going to go with my favorite one of those, Jason and the Argonauts.
That was on my list. That was possibly going to be my final nominee. So.
It's so good. The set pieces, the creatures, the characters. This was one of my favorite movies growing up. I would watch this like once a month. And the Harryhausen special effects to this day. Talos is one of my favorite creature designs ever.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It's well worth nominating in this category. If you haven't checked it out, lots of old stuff in this category. Because again, Swords and Sandals is a pretty old genre. So Jason and the Argonauts is a good one to go back and check out. This one isn't quite as old as that, and, kind of gets us into a little bit of an iffy part of the swords and sandals category, which is like medieval swords and sandals. I'm going to go with First Knight, which is one of my favorite stories of the Knights of the Round Table. This is Sean Connery. It is really, it's one that just hit me at the right time when it came out, and I just had a really good time with it, and I really need to rewatch it. I haven't watched it in several years, had it on my list in case I needed a final nominee. So since you took Jason and the Argonauts, I'm going to go with First Knight as my final nominee. Have you seen it?
Cool. First Knight, I have not.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you watch Bahubali and I'll watch First Knight?
How about it? How about we do that? That sounds like
a plan. Sounds
good. I'll get back to you in about 10 years when I get to that part of my list.
Yeah, exactly. I totally understand that. Totally
understand. All right. So here's what we got. Ben-Hur, 1959, Spartacus, Passion of the Christ, First Knight, 300, Jason and the Argonauts, Gladiator, and Bahubali are the nominees. Lean in any way in particular for number one?
Either Gladiator or Bahubali, but I know you haven't seen it, so I'm just leaning towards Gladiator.
Yeah, and you haven't seen Ben-Hur or Spartacus, which would be the other two I would throw into this conversation.
But if you think that they are genuinely better than Gladiator, I think
we've both seen Gladiator, and it's close enough, if it's not better than those, that I think we can make that our choice. So the best ever swords and sandals movie of all time, appropriately enough, since we're reviewing the sequel, is Gladiator. Yep. All right. Well, let's head into the final artifact. Andrew, let's talk about Wicked.
Welcome, new students, to Shiz University.
Miss Elphaba.
You can room with Miss Galinda.
Oh, popular. I know about popular.
Oh, I saved you some space, by the way.
Do you really think this is fair?
I do not. I was promised a private suite. But thanks for asking.
Elphaba, an ostracized but defiant girl born with green skin, and Galinda, a privileged aristocrat born popular, become extremely unlikely friends in the magical land of Oz. As the two girls struggle with their opposing personalities, their friendship is tested as both begin to fulfill their destinies as Glinda the Good and the Wicked Witch of the West. This, of course, was a Broadway show before it became this movie musical, and it has been out for a long time on Broadway, but now it's a part one in our screens. I think although the movie is just called Wicked, which is interesting to me, I think that just means the next one will be Wicked Part Two or something like that, I imagine.
Yeah, I didn't know that this was a part one, part two film.
Oh, really? I was just about to say they did a good job making sure everybody knew it was a part one, part two.
I mean, man, okay. I didn't know until the credit scroll popped up and it said Wicked. And then part one, I'm like, oh, part one.
You had a Dune part one experience then.
I really did.
Okay, so.
I got a question for you, Aaron, before we get started.
Yeah.
Are you familiar at all with the Broadway musical? Like, before, I mean, you've seen this, had you seen the musical?
I have not seen it. No, okay. I have not. I have not had a chance to see it on Broadway. So this was my first experience with the story in complete. But I have just through osmosis, pop culture osmosis, know a couple of the songs. And it was funny because I kind of sang popular a little bit. I knew that song. And when it came on in the movie, I was like, oh, I know this song.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, this is where it's from.
And I was like, I thought that was from High School Musical or something. it's just funny how your brain just fills in the wrong blanks when you hear stuff enough. But of course, Defying Gravity, I knew was from this. And, was obviously Idina Menzel doing Flying Gravity, saw clips of that and different things like that. So pretty impressive. Replacing Idina Menzel is Cynthia Erivo. And then Ariana Grande coming in for the Glinda role. What did you think, Mr. Ormsby? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Keep in mind, I don't like musicals.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Nice. I wondered, because this is a full-on musical, Andrew Ormsby.
Sure is. What about you, my good friend? What
do you think? I loved it. Nice. Loved it again. I loved it. I was floating above my seat. I was literally defying gravity during this movie. I think there's many reasons for that. One is I'm a sucker for musicals. I think if you can find people who can sing Broadway style musical numbers the right way, and the lyrics they're singing have emotion behind them that ties to a story I'm watching, I'm owned. I'm in it. Like, you've got me. And so that's, you know, that's obviously here quite a bit. There's a reason this Broadway musical was so successful. They wrote some really great stuff for what's going on here. I also think the story is fascinating. I think the origin story they've given Glinda in Elphaba, who becomes the Wicked Witch of the West, is genuinely not only lore building and world building, but contextually deep and beautiful, and there's a real longing to it, and a real like almost a tortured quality to it that's I found really, really captivating. So I thought all that stuff was good. So it had that going for it. It had incredible performances from Michelle Yeoh and Jeff Goldblum stepping in. Jeff Goldblum sings in this movie. I was not expecting that. And a great voice performance by Peter Dinklage, who I just loved in this as well. And then you get to like Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, and they are just absolutely astonishing with the work they're doing vocally in this movie. So yeah, all of that together just means I'm just in. I looked at my watch when I came out. I was like, that was 3 hours. It could have been 30 minutes. I was just like,
really?
Yeah, wow. I was just in it. Enjoyed every second of it. I was so in it. My bladder didn't even have time to realize, how full it was until the credits, started rolling. So, I think there's something about musicals, man. They just get me. So I am curious, what's some of your general thoughts as somebody who musicals aren't really your thing?
I think that Ariana Grande as Glinda is inspired casting.
Mm-hmm.
She had me laughing throughout. Yeah. While at the same time, I thought her character was well written. The self-obsessed do-gooder who doesn't realize her acts of charity are only in service to her own vanity,
mm-hmm.
is such a fun character.
It really is.
It's so fun. Man, Cynthia Erivo can sing. She can sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's also a great actress. She totally immersed herself in this role, and I feel in the way she always holds her head high when people are cruel to her,
mm-hmm.
it's a great testament. It's something very inspiring. That's the other thing about this movie. We talk about, you know, subverting expectations, and that's what the entire story or the plot of this movie is, or play, is to subvert what your previous expectations of what the Wicked Witch of the West is supposed to be like, or even Glinda, the Good Witch, to be like, the Wizard. Are we going to talk spoilers because the musical's been out forever, or?
That's interesting. I try to think of myself listening to something, what I would be bummed that I heard, you know, before going into the movie. Of course, for me, that's probably a lot more than most people, but I don't know. Use your best discretion, you know.
Okay.
That's fine. If you don't want to know anything about, you know, this movie, you probably should wait till after you see the movie to listen to us anyway, but
that's true.
We'll try to be okay, but yeah, what do you want to say?
The fact that with the people we thought were villains are really misunderstood, and the people we thought were heroes were misunderstood.
I think the first Wizard of Oz is pretty clear on that too.
I think the first Wizard of Oz is clear on the fact that the wizard is
a charlatan. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what his whole shtick is, that he is a charlatan.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie paints an even darker picture of him, I think.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
Not that I'm complaining. I was fascinated and I was captivated the whole way through. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think I only have one negative for this movie.
Throw it at me so we can get out of the way and just keep praising this amazing movie.
Yeah, let's do it. if it wasn't for the fact it was a musical, I would probably love this movie. But then again, it's just not a movie that wasn't made for me. But here's my one con. I didn't find everyone's disdain for Elphaba believable.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to talk about this because think... Yeah,
go ahead.
No, okay. You go ahead first.
In a world where everyone dresses and acts weird and bombastic, and they're talking animals and different races of beings,
yep.
It doesn't seem to be far-fetched that someone with green skin would be so out of place.
Right. So I had the same thought, and I think it's kind of the whole point of the musical.
So I
think the whole point is that we always find something. As progressive as we think we are, as accepting and inclusive as we think we are, that human nature will always find a difference. And in this case, it just happens to be green skin. And that is not something they are familiar with. There is nobody else in this world that we see that has green skin. It is a one of one, as far as we know. And so I think, at least this first movie is a lot about what it means for how humans see differences as obstacles and also can see them as, envies. We can be envious of people's differences. We can hate people's differences, and what it means to love people, you know, completely setting aside their differences, is kind of what I think the whole movie, at least as I understand it, is about. So yes, it does feel like, look at all these things that are different from how that what I see in my world, you know, whether it be talking animals or people dressed in wild clothing that I don't see or, you know, usually or whatever. But at the same time, for them in their world, that's the normal, right? And the green skin is the abnormal. And it's kind of a way of saying, you know, all sneetches are going to find somebody without stars on their belly or some to mix, you know, Seuss with
way
with
to mix Oz. Harry Potter with
yeah. So oh wait, you thought no, not that Sneetch. Is that called a Sneetch? Oh. I thought it was called a snitch.
Those are Sneetches.
No. Oh. Sneetches are Dr. Seuss thing. Oh. Anyways, the stars and the no stars. Have you?
Oh yes. Yeah. Stars on the belly.
Yeah. Star bellied Sneetches. So yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I do kind of think it's a bit the point, and you're supposed to go with it. There's a suspension of disbelief there a little bit, again, because what we're seeing is all fantasy to us, but to them, the other stuff is normal, right? It's the green that's the weird.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think it works for me. I didn't really have any cons. You know, again, I had such a great time. I can think, you know, I also just saw this today, so maybe there would be something that'll hit me
Ooh,
later.
It's fresh in your brain.
Yeah, it's really, really, really fresh. But there's plenty of stuff I loved. I want to talk about. One thing is I really love the Easter egging in this movie all seems contextually relevant to the plot. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of there are some, and of course in part two maybe those will even, like, for instance, an Easter egging that is not relevant to the plot but is also so subtle that it's not necessarily like distracting is Backwoodsman, you know, which sounds like Backwoodsman or whatever. Yeah. The character, we start to wonder, oh, is that, you know, Tin Woodsman's dad? Cause his name was Tin Woodsman or whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, there's stuff like that, but for the most part, they find really interesting ways to integrate, you know, the hat, the cape, the, you know, the movements, the, all these things that we know from the first movie become even more interesting and meaningful. In fact, the most meaningful part of the movie to me is a dance scene. And I won't, you know, necessarily go into a lot of detail. If you've seen the movie, you know, they all go out to a dance and there's this, really beautiful moment that happens,
between. Are you talking about this moment?
Yeah. Between,
Almost had me teared.
I was crying. I was crying through a lot of that. And because it's so meaningful to be seen. Everybody knows that feeling of just like, oh, you see me, you get me, like, you know, especially somebody who has been shunned as much as, you know, she has. But there's this really interesting moment in the movie takes the idea of dance and turns it into communication.
Mm.
And then later in the movie, part of that dance is even used as a simplified way to, you know, to communicate between Elphaba and Glinda. And then you think back to the original movie, and that motion that I'm talking about is in the original movie, and it adds such depth Like, this is the beautiful thing you can do with this kind of stuff, is you can make the original feel deeper. You can add depth. You know, Lucas talked a lot about this with the Star Wars, you know, echoing each other. And you know, the intent for the prequels was to make the original movies feel even deeper than they were or whatever. But this is how to do it successfully. And I just feel like you could watch the original Wizard of Oz after this and catch a few things and go, oh, that's what that means. You know what I mean? That's just really smart.
I literally just had that moment. And that's what I was giggling at, because as you said, like, the Tin Woodsman, you know, and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, there's a scene where there's an animal in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I just like just now had the moment where I was like, oh, that grows up to be so and so.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. How did I not see that?
Yes.
I'm an idiot.
Yes.
I'm so foolish.
So there are just those I just think all the Easter egging is more lore building, and it's just I think it really, really works well. The other thing I want to talk about, and then I'll cede the rest of my time to the gentleman from the Ormspeak clan, is how much I loved how complete this movie was, even as a part one. You can walk away from this movie, and let's say part two just never happens. I think you can be satisfied with this movie. I think it, for what it does as a prequel, you could walk away going, there's a complete character arc there. We know what happens. Now, are they going to build on that? And is this particular plot going to go to different places in the next one? Yes, I'm sure it will. And that'll be even deeper and more beautiful. But I just love how complete a film this feels like to me, even though it was a part one. And I, in general, don't like splitting movies up intentionally like this. But if you're going to do it, I like it to feel like its own movie, and I think that this does. I think it has an advantage because it's a Broadway show, because Broadway shows do this automatically because they have intermissions. They already have an ebb and flow that lends itself well to a big moment, a big stop, you know, in the middle of the story that feels resolved and also pushes to something possibly new, because that's what you want to take people into intermission with. So I think you can really sense that, you know, this is kind of the intermission break. And at the same time, you feel like you've already been fed a great story. So I did want to address that, because I know we've had that conversation before. So what other thoughts do you have, Andrew?
I'm going to make a weird comparison. I'm going to compare this movie to Infinity War.
Okay.
Because I felt the same way at the end of this movie as I did at the end of Infinity War.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Not that these movies are similar thematically or anything, but the way that this wraps up, it's part one and still feels like a full film. Because we in Endgame, whenever Endgame was coming around, we already knew what was going to happen. We already knew, you know, like, they're coming back. They have to come back, you know. Here, we kind of know, like, well, she's going to turn into the Wicked Witch of the West, and her sister is going to turn into the Wicked Witch of the East.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy's going to drop a house on her sister. By the way, now that I know who the sister is, not sure how I feel about that, Dorothy. She's a sweetheart.
You heard it here first. Dorothy's canceled.
Dorothy's canceled, yeah. But yeah, I love the fact that seeing all of these characters that we're going to meet in the original Wizard of Oz is fun, but the movie stands on its own two feet. It doesn't rely on nostalgia or those Easter eggs or anything like that. This story is fully about Elphaba and the trauma that she goes through, the gifts she has that she feels are a curse, you know? That's something that I truly felt was absolutely beautiful in this movie, is the fact that the themes around just because you're different doesn't mean that you're broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of moments in this where you see Elphaba prove that she is not only better, but a better, like, magically than everybody else, but also a better person than everybody else. Her empathy and stuff like that. Yeah, I like Peter Dinklage as Dr. Dillamond. I just like Peter Dinklage. So to hear his voice, it took me a second. I'm like, I know that voice. Who is that? Who is that? Yeah. I'm starting to really appreciate John M. Chu, the director of this film. I'm really starting to appreciate his work because,
yeah,
as somebody who doesn't like musicals, I'm looking at his body of work and I'm going, okay, well, maybe I do like musicals, or maybe I like John M. Chu musicals, you know, because In the Heights was great. Crazy Rich Asians isn't a musical, but I love that movie. And here we are now with Wicked Part One.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to mention with the, I'm sure I'm not the first to mention this, but the idea of Dinklage playing a character in The Wizard of Oz is really powerful, considering some of the things that he has said about, you know, how casting small people as munchkins and those kind of things, and how he never wanted to be limited to those roles. And now he actually has a role in The Wizard of Oz, and it's not a munchkin. And that doesn't go unnoticed. And I think is a really beautiful thing. In fact, I don't think any of the munchkins are necessarily played by little people in this one. I may have missed, but
I don't think so either.
Yeah,
because I know I saw some familiar faces, and I'm looking at the cast list right now, and I'm like, I know that's not a little person.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So cool stuff there. Do you have one final thing, Andrew?
Believe it or not, I'm excited for part two.
Yeah, let's go. I'm excited as well. My one final thing is one of my favorite dual cameos of all time in this movie caught me completely off guard and just absolutely loved it. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That is Wicked. It is in theaters now. It made me
miss the fact I never saw it on Broadway.
Yeah. That cameo scene. Yeah, for sure.
Like, oh, man, that probably would have been really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. We did it. We did a podcast, man. Woo! Congratulations. It's not easy.
No, it's not. It's like going 3 days in a coliseum.
That's right. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks,
man. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. You can check that out. It starts at $3 a month. And you can check that out at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. You can also email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than pronouncing Galinda if you're a goat. We will be back in a couple weeks. We're going to take Thanksgiving week off, and then we'll be back the week after that. And we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Ritual is hardly the only brand running a Black Friday sale, and you've probably got tons of baby items on your list. But how about what your body needs? With a range of pregnancy-safe nutrient support, including natal choline and their best-selling prenatal multivitamin, Ritual is where you can use your savings to support you and your baby. Products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through their trademark traceable supply chain. So don't skip the essentials. Shop 40% off at ritual.com/podcast.